Hello and welcome to The Plotting Shed. You're listening to Rachel McCarty, founder of plotplots.com and author of the book I Want to Like My Garden. Each week, The Plotting Shed discusses different aspects of garden design, but we focus on things that other books don't really talk about. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and do please hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. Well, hello and welcome back to another edition of The Plotting Shed. It's lovely to be able to speak to you again. I hope your weeks have all been fantastic. This week, I thought I would slightly diverge from most of the sort of the posts and things that I put on my website, which is generally about small and smaller garden design, because not everybody has a small garden, although the vast majority of us all do have much smaller gardens these days. Some people are blessed or maybe afflicted by having much, much larger gardens. And I thought it would be a good idea if we gave some beginner design tips to helping those of you who have a much bigger space get your head round how you could design and lay out the garden in a basic format, because most of you with really big, large garden redesigns will probably look to get maybe landscapers in or a garden designer in to design the layout. But there is a problem with hiring outside people in to do your garden, is that they don't know how you use your garden. And unless you as the garden owner can understand some of the design principles with larger gardens, it's very easy for a design to be imposed on you. You get given this beautiful design report or this 3D mock-up graphic image of how the garden could look. And it's very, very easy to get drawn into this fabulous image and vista that you're seeing and get excited about it. But what happens is you forget who the garden's for. It's for you. And unless you begin to ask some fairly serious questions about the design and layout of the garden, it's very, very easy to spend an awful lot of money on garden design and creating features that you simply don't need or that you won't use. Just last year, one of my customers had contacted me to say that she'd had some landscapers in. The quote that she had to redo the back garden, which was a larger than average size garden, but just the back garden, was £40,000. Now, I don't know about you, but that's an awful lot of money for plants and patios. I need to justify that all of that £40,000 is well spent. Because all too often, and if you look through pictures on the internet, you'll see what actually does happen, where the landscaping is all created and built, and there are structures and pergolas and maybe raised beds and jutty out bits and formal designs and contemporary designs and all this kind of thing. And then the planting is pretty threadbare and actually quite small. And most of this is because the budgets were spent up on the hard landscaping and there wasn't enough left for the plants. Before we start, I'll just go through the three main types of large-sized gardens that you do see. These fall into three categories: formal gardens, more natural-looking gardens, and then my definition are cluttered gardens. Formal gardens, you all know, if you type it into the internet, there are lots of straight lines and big wide-open lawns and rectangular long borders, and you might have repetition, you might have symmetry. The garden can be compartmentalized into different areas, and each section of the garden will have a different feel. But the whole purpose of a formal garden is to show how different it is to the landscape around it. Now, formal gardens are always pretty high maintenance, simply because plants don't know that they're supposed to stay in a box shape or a dome shape or a ball shape. So you're constantly having to maintain these gardens. Then there are more natural looking landscapes. And these are where the boundaries are blurred between your garden and the countryside outside or the landscape outside. You might not be able to see the edge of your garden. And what this enables you to do is borrow the landscape from outside and attach it to the plants in your garden. Because if you can't see that hard, fast, straight line boundary, it makes the garden feel bigger. Natural gardens are not just naturalistic and full of wildflowers and wavy grasses. It can also be that they're much more organic in shape. There's no particular style or repetition. The garden might just sort of evolve. It follows natural contours, for example. The lawn might not be a regular shape simply because it can't be, because the ground has raised up or lowered down, or there's a hollow. And so the lawn and the planting will tend to follow the contours of the landscape more. It doesn't matter which type you particularly like, but generally that's two of the main styles that people are trying to go for in any garden. Unfortunately, what often happens is that they land inadvertently into the third style, which is cluttered. And a cluttered garden occurs simply because you have a big space. So the theory is that you have to find things to put in various parts. And the problem arises because the questions as to why that design was being created weren't asked. So in order to avoid spending huge amounts of hard landscaping cash on maybe features that aren't necessary in a large garden, you need to ask some questions. Why would I want to sit in this part of the garden? What am I going to look at? What is going to encourage me to go all the way down from my house right to this part of the garden and use it? What will make me stay here? How interesting is this area to me? Humans tend to be relatively lazy. If we have the patio outside the back door, I can guarantee you 90% of the time that that's where people will sit. So there has to be a really good reason, a really compelling thought process that makes you want to walk all the way down through the end of the garden. But you need to justify its presence. It needs to answer that question for you. Yes, it may be lovely to have this beautiful patio or this folly, whatever you want to have at the end of the garden. But if you never use it, you don't sit in it, you don't walk down there, you just look at it from the house. It's a very, very expensive feature. Or is it a white elephant? It might well become a white elephant, especially if you're not using it, but you've still got to maintain it. So the most important thing you can do is to justify why you would want to go down that part of the garden. And if you can justify it and there's a reason, maybe if you go down this part of the garden, you get a view that you don't see from the house, and it's a beautiful view. Well, then there is a reason to make a feature there and spend some money. But if you can't find a reason, there is no point in spending hard landscaping design money on creating something there. It's not going to make you use it. Now, one of the big advantages of large gardens is that you have the ability of having more views or vistas than smaller gardens have. You tend not to be quite so overlooked. You are probably not in an urban landscape, so you will have a big sky above you. You might have distant views into the countryside or forests or over the sea or whatever it is. One of the decisions you have to make about your view and your vista is how you define it with your garden. And what I mean is the same thing as we went back to formal or informal gardens, natural looking gardens. If you want to define the edge of where your land is, then you will put up a fixed boundary. There will be a clear delineated line in that view or that vista that denotes your property, with the outside world or the neighbours. So if you create that in a formal setting or a formal straight line, then it's a very obvious kind of black line down the page. Now that's fine if that's what you want to create. But if you have the ability to have a larger landscape and you can bring that into the garden, why wouldn't you use it? Now, some of you may say, yes, but I need a boundary. Well, that's fine. Yes, you do need a boundary. But why does it have to be level and straight? If you've ever looked at some of the sort of the undulating hedges that sometimes people create, if you have a hedge that sort of rises and falls, you can trim it to the lines of the landscape. You can blur the hedge in, or you can mirror the contours of the wider landscape at the end of your garden. You'll still have a boundary, you'll still have that demarking line, but what you do is you reduce the kind of the big black nature of it, you know, this great big sharpie line down the middle of the page. It's now more subtle. Now obviously if you have a more natural garden, you can take away those boundaries completely, or you can have open fencing that allows you to look through. But the whole point is, if you've got the ability to see further, why would you enclose yourself in unless there is a very good reason for you to do so? But the whole point again is, I've asked the question, why? Why would I want to have this view open? How will having this view more open benefit me? What would be the downside of seeing past my boundary? All of these questions you need to think about for those parts of the garden where you have views and vistas. Now, another design feature are the routes that you have to take through the garden, down to some of these features and areas that you choose to use. Now, having looked through lots and lots of images of garden paths and the designs of these paths, there is another pitfall that occurs. And I suppose it comes back to the fact that if you are getting people in to do the garden, they are there to provide a service for you, but they're also there to build the garden, and that should generate their income and make them money. So there is a slight trade-off between landscapers and garden designers who are looking to put more features into the garden than you might have originally thought of, because those features can be small profit centres in their own right. Now, paths are exactly one of those. Everybody needs paths. But all too often, in the larger spaces, the paths become really, really visually dominant features of the garden. And in fact, they can define the layout of the garden in its entirety. My argument would be that a path is functional. It is there simply as a means for you to get from one place to another. So for it to be useful, it has to be safe to walk on. It has to be hard wearing. It has to be convenient. And it has to be all weather. And also it has to be attractive. But this is the problem. It's that last little bit. It has to be attractive. What then happens is the path has additional design features added to it. Your shingle path then has brick edging. The block paving has an edging to it. You add lights to the path. You do all sorts of things to make the path more of a feature. And then what happens is the path becomes the feature. It becomes all that you see. Now, paths are not to be looked at, they're to be walked on. So when you are designing and looking at the paths, what is the minimum amount of pathway, the minimum volume, length of route that I need to put into this garden to get from A to B? Because it's the rest of the garden that will hold your interest. Let's face it, you're not going to sit in the garden looking at everything and go, oh my, what a gorgeous path. Now, the other part of hard landscaping features is purpose. Paths quite clearly have purpose. You need to walk along them. But not all hard landscaping features in large scale gardens have a purpose. But if they don't have a purpose and they only have an aesthetic value, You're spending a lot of money on something just to look good. I see a lot of gardens that have brick-built, rendered, raised borders. There are gardens that will have pergolas and walkways just popped through the middle of the garden. Now, all of these cost significant sums of money to build. But if it doesn't have a purpose as well as an aesthetic value, question why you are spending that money. And also, don't forget, the cost is not just monetary, cost is time. How much time and effort are you going to have to spend to maintain that hard landscaping feature if it has no purpose and you don't use it? Now, one of the other big advantages with large gardens is that not only do you have, as I've said, the views and the vistas that you have in the wider landscape, how you lay out the garden will also create its own miniature views and vistas. The simplest way to explain this will be if you have a narrow rectangular lawn and you mow the stripes along the long side of the lawn, so you have long thin stripes, all of the lines will be pointing down to a certain point. It could be that there are even shadows from trees or you've created hedges, and those will narrow your view to a point. So you can create a lot of interest by using lots of small micro views. But the point is, if you create a linear, look down here route, there has to be something at the end to capture your interest. Often, what is at the end is just simply too small. It's insignificant. It doesn't jump out at you. Having a tiny urn standing on something or a small pot of red geraniums is just not going to cut the mustard because you're not going to be able to see it from the viewpoint that you are using, which is closer to the house. So most of the focal points that you have or that you will use have to have a big enough display in order for you to notice them at the end of the garden. And I would have suggested two really good things to use are shiny objects or moving objects. So you can have a tree, beautiful featured tree, because it will change colour and it will move. You can have a feature giant grass because, again, it will move. You could have some sort of mirrored effect because the light will catch your eye, it will flash. And that's the whole point of a focal point, is that you actually go, oh, what's down there? It encourages you to go down and have a look at it. And one of the problems that larger gardens have is that normally I say in a small garden, there is this 80-20 rule, in that 20% of the garden is used 80% of the time. Well, larger gardens don't operate that way. In fact, it's probably 90-10. 10% of the garden is used 90% of the time, and 90% of the garden is only used 10% of the time. So you have to create more reasons, stronger, more compelling reasons to visit that 90% of the garden that you don't normally use. As I said at the very beginning, this is a sort of a beginner's guide, not to tell you how to create exotic designs in a massive garden, because as I said, most of you will probably go and get a designer or a landscaper in to have a look at it. But this is very much about you understanding the workings of the design, so you benefit from having the garden that is created and you don't end up with a 90-90-10 garden. You know, a well-designed garden, even how big it is, should at least get you using 30% of it, not 5% to 10%. I haven't even spoken about plants yet, have I? Goodness me, it's all these other things that to consider. So we'll talk about plants just briefly, because large gardens, by their definition, are going to have lots of space to put lots of plants, and it's expensive. One of the dangers of creating a garden design or using landscapers is that your budgets get used up on the landscaping, which doesn't leave enough money for the density of planting that you might want to have. It all looks a bit bitty and a bit small. What a lot of people will kind of do in larger gardens is they go, right, we have trees, that we'll have a lot of trees because they're big, they fill up the space. Well, that's fine. Yes, they do fill up the space. And then you will have large, deep borders with shrubs in, maybe that disguise the boundaries. And that's fine. There is nothing wrong with that, because from your house, then the view down towards down the garden will blend your shrubs and trees into the natural background behind. A lot of the, especially formal gardens, use border planting, the stuff that you're putting those plants and bulbs and perennials and all sorts of things in. But the problem is sometimes it's just not tall enough. It doesn't need to be dense, it needs to be tall. Designers and gardeners then plant hedges in order to give you a backstop to that border. And you will have all seen it if you go round a municipal park or a National Trust garden. A lot of the border displays will be knee height and up to mid waist height, and then surrounded by nice neat low hedges are surrounding those areas. Then you have bigger green taller hedges to block out what's beyond. And I think this is the wrong way to do it, because from the view from your house, you need to have a layer. So you need to have a low layer, a middle layer, and an upper layer. Now the trees and the big shrubs form that upper layer. The bulbs and the flowers and the perennials form the lower layer. But you can have taller, the mid-range, what is at my head height as I walk down the garden? Because that will give you the better view from the house. And what you need are the equivalent of, I think, you know, pillars or fountains. You don't need blocks of height, you need dots of height. Because that will join the landscape from lower to upper. But what it won't do is close your space in. Now, a lot of people do like this idea of garden rooms. I will hold my hand up and say I'm not a lover of garden rooms. I find them claustrophobic. I like to see my vista. I like to see what the garden has got to deliver. But I don't want to see all of it. I just want to be tantalised a little bit that I can't quite see around that area there, because I've put some slightly taller plants in, so I have to walk down the garden. Now, the trick with planting any big garden is the repetition of colour. And these are the things that will join the various areas of your garden together, because as they flower, you will look for those little pops and spots of colours in a bigger garden. So again, if you get a landscape designer coming in or showing you, these are the things that you want to be questioning them about. So if somebody does say, yes, let's put a feature in there, you can justify the cost and justify the expense and justify the benefit. Because ultimately, large gardens have the same design principles as smaller gardens. It's just on a bigger scale and you spend more money doing them and you use more plants. Don't be frightened of space, and don't be frightened of blurring your boundaries or bringing the outside in. You can think big in a big garden, but what you need to do is justify the expense or the expenditure that you're making. And that way you will end up with a garden that works for you much better. And hopefully you might have saved yourself some money on unnecessary landscaping simply because you've questioned it. So there was a lot to go through there. If you've got any questions, then do please drop me a line, rachel@plantplots.com, or you can put comments on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/plantplots, or you can send me a WhatsApp. That'd be lovely to hear from you. In the meantime, take care, and I will speak to you all next week. Bye for now. Well, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Rachel McCartney of The Plotting Shed. If you've got any questions about this podcast, please email me, rachel@plantplots.com, or you visit the website with loads of different information on garden design and gardening advice. along with planting plans that you can download. You can look at the designs that we've created. So do take a look, and please do hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. You can also donate if you go onto the website plantplots.com. There's a little button there saying you can buy me a coffee. So all donations will be hugely appreciated. Thank you very much. Enjoy your week, enjoy your garden, take care and stay well.